This has got you written all over it. The Mets stayed in a Pittsburgh hotel that also hosted a convention of people dressed up as furry creatures.
Oh, no.
Is this Wilbon's worst nightmare?
No, it's worse than my worst nightmare. My worst nightmare is mascots.
Look at that.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
What are they thinking, Bobby?
All right, let me tell you something. Here's the real story here. In 40 years worth of being on the road, traveling around this great land of ours, checking into countless hotels of all stripes, here's what I've learned. There's a frightening amount of subcultures out there, Mike, and they all have conventions.
Yeah, but you've never seen these people.
I want to understand one thing.
I've never seen them.
Stay away from me.
Thank you very much.
Well, the mistreatment at the hands of the reporter kind of speaks to a larger thing that I've noticed in a way, and that's that in the UFO community, it often seems like abductees are treated as like evidence and not as people. And, you know, they're right up against the skeptics all the time. They have to deal with all that. And then to the UFO community, it's like they're trying to get blood from a stone. They're always trying to get more information from them. And it seems like, you know, they lose that humanity in a way to this research community. Did Betty and Barney go through that sort of experience, and what was that like?
Yes, I do believe that Betty and Barney did go through that experience. I know that Barney was greatly distressed when researchers and scientists would go to his house and would ask to listen to the abduction tapes. And, of course, when there was one point on those tapes where he was terrified and he broke down and he was frantic and he was screaming, or very distressed. And he was fearing for his own life at that point. And he thought that those
Oh, my God. What is going on here? Weird.
Hello.
I got disconnected from you, or I lost you. You phased out there on me. I couldn't hear anything anymore. So I figured I'd try to call you back and see if we got a better connection this time.
Well, just keep calling me back if this happens. I haven't had any difficulties for a long, long time, and I can tell you I did an interview on Monday night. I've done one every night, but on Monday night, I got cut off 3 times.
Weird.
And I don't know what's going on.
They don't want you talking about this case anymore. Kathy.
I don't know what it is. I've talked about it enough so that
I know. What's the
Yeah.
They don't want me talking about it. I don't get it. I don't like that. So
we could be paranoid, or we could think that it's the line.
So, all right, let's get back to this. The abductees as evidence. This is the most troubling question we've had all night here. We can't seem to get to it. But you know, abductees as evidence. You know, as seen by. Really, now that I'm thinking more about it, not just the UFO community, but also the government as well. I mean, there's probably a possibility that was going on, too.
There is a possibility that it was. I don't know for sure. But, you know, of course, Betty and Barney believed in many ways that they were being viewed by scientists sort of as specimens, you know, looking at their psychological state of being, and Barney was very distressed when scientists wanted to listen. Where he became very emotionally distressed. And I want to say that there's a false impression, it's been disseminated in the mainstream media, that Barney was highly emotional throughout that trip. And that is false. And if you listen to the hypnosis tapes, you will realize that it is false. Barney became very, very frightened when he was in the field. And when Dr. Simon was forcing him to remember that point at which he had...
I just got people think that that Barney was distressed the whole time on the taste, but he was only distressed when he was forced by Dr. Simon to go into the field.
Okay.
Then you cut out again. I don't know what's going on here. I'm on a corded phone, too, so there shouldn't be any... this is frustrating.
Right. It certainly is. So let me pick up from there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Barney thought that people would misjudge him. I think that it's understandable that when someone is in fear that they might lose their lives, that they might become highly emotional. And at this one point on those hypnosis tapes, when he was being forced by Dr. Simon to recall that period in the field for which he had developed this mental block, Barney lost it. He was terrified. He was hysterical. He screamed a couple of times. He was shrieking. And I think that's understandable, but it bothered him terribly when scientists listened to that information about him, because he was afraid he would be misjudged, that they would think that he wasn't a brave man. And here we have a man who served during World War II. He was in the Army. In 1961, he was married to a white woman, and that in itself was a brave thing to do. He was a civil rights leader in the state of New Hampshire. So, you know, it was obvious he was a brave man, but he did have that concern. There was also the idea of this psychological examination. Well, any mental health practitioner who did examine Betty and Barney determined that they were perfectly healthy and normal. But I guess from a distance, people who didn't know them hypothesized that they might have had personality disorders, and mm-hmm. they might have been fantasy prone, or this might have been temporary psychosis. There were all sorts of ridiculous explanations and hypotheses for what might have happened. Hello.
Very strange. We got you up to where you said there are a lot of hypotheses, strange hypotheses for what happened. Maybe we should just move to the next question and see if we get better luck on somehow.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on. I'm just stunned, so I'm hoping maybe if we move to something else, maybe we'll have better luck. try everything, right?
Yes.
Okay, so they're outed, and they decide to face the music, if you will, and share their story with the world. And that's really, you know, when this whole thing becomes like a national sensation in a lot of ways. They're struggling. They decide to come clean. What was their next step? To contact the media themselves?
During the first week of November 1965, Betty and Barney spoke to the public for the first time at the Unitarian Church in Dover, New Hampshire. There was an overflow crowd. They were introduced by the public relations or the public information officer from Pease Air Force Base, who gave a brief statement. And then Betty and Barney spoke about their UFO sighting. They didn't talk about their abduction. So that was their first public statement. Before that, they had spoken to a group of UFO investigators in 1963. That was a two-state UFO study group. So it was just a meeting of members of the study group that they had spoken to. It was kind of on an impromptu basis. They weren't on the agenda, but they had been invited to go to the study group, and they went to learn more about UFOs. And they had spoken to some members of their church previously, just about their sighting, not about the abduction itself.
Yeah.
So, yes, and then it was at that church in Dover where they spoke that they met John G. Fuller. He was in the area. He was writing and doing research on his book, Incident at Exeter, mm-hmm. and he approached Betty and Barney. He was introduced to them by Ben Sweat, who was an officer at Pease Air Force Base, who was sort of working with Betty and Barney in attempting to help them to cope with the situation that they had gone through. In fact, when Dr. Simon had turned the hypnosis tapes over to them, they gave those tapes to Ben and went to his house and listened to them with Ben. Ben was a hypnotist, and Ben made a statement on a television program that I did, where we went down to his home near Washington, D.C. to interview him, that after they listened to those tapes, Barney got up and went to the sink and vomited. And Ben said, that's not something that you can fake.
Yeah, absolutely. That's just tangible. I don't know. There's a word I'm trying to come up with here, but that's just beyond the pale.
Yes. Wow. So getting back to your question, I'm sorry I got off on a tangent there. But getting back to your question, they met John Fuller. He presented a proposal to them. They met with him a few times and decided that they would like to have Dr. Simon involved in a book as well. So they decided to consent to having this book written to tell the true story of what happened to them.
Exactly, yeah, which is important because, you know, in this day and age now, especially like of spin and everything, you got to control the story. So they sort of saw that themselves, you know, that they can't sit back and let somebody just have the story keep getting regurgitated over and over again and without, you know, getting the firsthand perspective out there.
Yes.
And then at that point, they almost like become, so you say they were well known in New Hampshire, but then they become sort of like celebrities in a big way, doing a lot of TV programs and stuff like that, I presume, right?
Yes, absolutely. They had to promote the book, and it became a New York Times bestseller. It went worldwide. It was published in a number of different countries and different languages. So, yes, they were suddenly thrust into the position of being celebrities, and it sort of pulled them away from their community activities, their civil rights activities, their political activities, and that sort of thing for a while.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure, you know, their whole lives changed, not just as a result of the incident, but also as a result of the notoriety that surrounded it. I mean, this is, and people need to remember, too, folks listening at home need to remember, you know, that this is seen as the seminal abduction case, the first ever abduction case in America. And really, behind the Villas Boas case, only the second abduction of the modern era that we really know about, or at least the most well-known. So, I mean, this isn't like nowadays when someone says they're an abductee, and it's like, hey, get in line, pal. It's like, this was really, really something different and stunning. So, I mean, how did they react? Oh, go ahead. Yeah, reflect on that a little bit.
It was the first case reported in the United States. The Villas Boas case wasn't reported publicly in the United States until about, I guess it was 1966 or 1967 by Jim and Coral Lorenzen, who were the heads of APRO. So no one knew about it earlier.
It was the first reported abduction case in America. Just amazing stuff there. I mean, so like I said, folks at home need to understand, this isn't just an abductee case. This is the first abductee case. So
Yeah. What
was, from a personality perspective, you know, you say that they got pulled away from their commitments, and I'm sure that was difficult. What was their perspective sort of on this celebrityhood? Because that changes people. That changes them, you know, fundamentally. So what was their reaction to that?
I think that they took it in stride. I think that Barney would have preferred to have devoted full time to his civil rights activities, and he tried to do both. And he was really burning the candle at both ends. He was working full time then at the Portsmouth Post Office. He was continuing with his civil rights activities, and he was on the road, he was speaking about his UFO experience. And I think that all of that might have combined to lead to his early demise. In 1969, February of the year, he died from a massive cerebral hemorrhage at the age of 46.
Wow. Wow. I'm sure that was just tremendously difficult for the whole family. I mean, this is one of those deaths that comes out of nowhere. This isn't like someone who was sick.
Yes, it was extremely difficult.
And it leaves Betty in a very difficult position as well because, you know, throughout the whole post-UFO encounter, she sort of had you know, not just, you know, not just her best friend, her husband with her by her side throughout the whole, you know, post situation, but, you know, she had someone who could back up the story and everything. So it's very, you know, it changes tremendously her perspective, I'm sure, because you go from being in a tandem to being on your own.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, he was a very good support for her. They had an incredibly good marriage, a great relationship, and all of a sudden she was alone. And it was very, very difficult. And, you know, we talked earlier about those earrings that were on the table. Well, there were some things that happened in Betty's house almost starting immediately after Barney died that were very distressing. And I ended up moving in with Betty to be with her, to watch her house for one thing, because people were breaking in and doing, or someone was breaking in and doing things that were very, very bizarre. Let me give you an example.
Yes, please do. I was afraid that you didn't want to talk about it, but now you've really got me intrigued, Kathy. Yeah. What are these
I was a college student at the University of New Hampshire. Betty was on the main floor of the house, and I was in the basement apartment. We kept the doors unlocked between the apartments, and I was down there studying one day, and it was about noon, and I heard someone walking around Betty's apartment, and I thought she'd probably returned home for lunch. So I went up the stairs and went in, calling her name, and she wasn't there. I looked, her car wasn't there, so I went back downstairs. And when I got down there, I'd no sooner gotten back to my studying, but I heard a loud bang, and then I heard footsteps, very heavy footsteps that sounded like someone was running. I ran back up the stairs, and there was a man who had dressed in a brown suit. He was running out of the front door of the house. Betty's apartment door was open. The front door of the house was open. The closet door was open. There was a baseball bat on the floor that Betty had in her closet. So someone had come to that house to do something, and I apparently interrupted what he had intended to do. But at other times, and the reason I moved in, is that Betty would go home from work, and there in her living room would be her dining room chairs arranged in a circle. Another time she went home from work and all of her coats had been taken out of her closet. They were mounded in a pile on her living room floor, and Barney's scarf was laying over the top.
You there still?
Yes.
I lost you right where you said Barney's scarf was laying on top. So right from there we lost you, but I didn't hang up. So luckily we got you back. But we're doing okay so far, so hopefully this will be lessened.
Did you get the part about Barney's scarf laying on top of the pile?
Yep, right. That's right when you cut up. You said Barney's scarf was laying on top.
Okay, so I'm going to say, I think that it was human activity. I think that the purpose of all of this was in an attempt to unnerve Betty, perhaps to drive her to a nervous breakdown, perhaps to anticipate that she might announce publicly that these bizarre things were happening in her house in order to discredit her. But I was there to support Betty. She had many friends who were supporting her and family who were a strong source of support to her. Somebody was trying to push her over the edge, and they failed. She eventually had a security system involved in her home that was wired into the police department, and this resolved the problem.
Nice, nice. Well, that makes sense, and that would suggest that it was human interaction, because if it was some kind of paranormal thing, it would find a way around these security measures, I'm sure.
Yes.
Now, that sort of, like, brings us there's a whole lot more, obviously, to the Betty and Barney Hill story, but, I mean, I know just talking to you here right now, that we could talk all night and then all day into the morning and all day tomorrow about the case. So we time, unfortunately, is our enemy in this sense. Of course, and people can talk to you when they come up to Exeter for the big festival in about a week. So we'll sort of like fine tune this, get more towards the end here, and just sort of look at this from a big picture perspective. You know, it's interesting that in the history of ufology, the Betty and Barney Hill case is the bridge from contactees to abductees. They're the ones who sort of started the whole abductee era, if you will, and then it really exploded, you know, about in the late 70s, early 80s. What do you think about how abduction research has gone on from your uncle and aunt's case?
I was very impressed by the quality of abduction research during the 60s and the 70s. There was funding. There were abduction investigators who were able to do a very thorough job. There were psychologists called in. In many of those early cases, the individuals who were claiming that they believed they were abducted were multiple witness cases. They were credible people. All of those individuals would take lie detector tests and pass them. So we didn't have just one person taking a lie detector test. There were several. They had psychological testing, and they tested normal on the psychological testing. And there was evidence that something had occurred. There had been a close encounter with an anomalous kind of craft. It looked like a plane coming in on free fall. It would stop and hover over a car, and the engine would die. Well, over time, as anyone who has been following this knows, this kind of scenario sort of came to an end, and the primary way that people appear to be abducted today is from their bedrooms while they're sleeping. And this makes it so much more difficult, because although there is oftentimes some evidence left behind, there is never an observation of a craft or a close encounter with a craft. There are hardly ever multiple witness reports. And it's extremely difficult to do this kind of investigation. And then you have the possibility that there might be a psychological explanation for it, where there is very limited evidence and no witnesses except for the person who's subjectively experiencing this. You know, maybe it's sleep paralysis with hypnagogic or hypnopompic hallucinations. Very valid explanation when there is no evidence and the person just wakes up paralyzed and observes maybe some small beings in the room.
Exactly, yeah. It got very strange, abductions. It seems like the Betty and Barney Hill case seems quaint in some respects compared to, you know, what we learn in subsequent years with regards to abductions and how and the tone they take in later years. It's very strange.
Yes, it is.
As we've said here at the beginning of the show, this is the 50th anniversary of Betty and Barney Hill's abduction. You know, I guess, what would you say is their lasting legacy on this strange paranormal world? I mean, they are household names to anyone who studies the paranormal. So, I mean, it's like I said earlier, it's an iconic case. But I guess speak to the legacy of this case.
Well, I think that what we can say is here we have a highly credible couple, respected in the community, who had no personal agenda for having a UFO sighting or a close encounter or an abduction. It just sort of came out of the blue when they were returning home on a vacation. And there's so much evidence that this probably was a real abduction that we all have to open our eyes. It causes people to think that perhaps we really are being visited. It causes us to have to change our worldview.
Yes, and beyond, really. Now, you know, I hear the tact taken, and this isn't really from skeptics, it's sort of from like people in the UFO community who say, you know, that with these cases that are really old, you know, nothing new ever comes to light. No one ever learns anything new. Like, everything we can learn has already come out about this case. Has there been anything sort of like new or, you know, revelatory that's come out in recent years, maybe from your research into Betty's files or from, you know, some other outside source, if you will?
As I examine those files, and there are thousands and thousands of pages there, I believe, and everything that's been written, occasionally I do find a new piece of information that hadn't been reported before and that I hadn't noticed during those 15 years when I researched the case initially. And just as an example of one of those was Barney's statement that he had observed figures on board the craft that were somehow not human. And he made that statement to Walter Webb in his initial investigation meeting report. So, you know, that was something that I just recently found, and it wasn't in Captured.
Now, what about any sort of, like, underlying remaining physical evidence? I mean, obviously, I know they had that university exhibit a few years ago where Betty's dress was put on display. Is there, what kind of stuff is still remaining from that night?
Yes, there's a chapter in my book, Captured, about the analyses that have been done on Betty's dress. Her dress has undergone chemical and forensic analysis four different times, and there's also been a seed growth study done with the pink powder that appeared on Betty's dress, a very strange pink powder. So, yes, there has been analysis on that, and that's pretty significant. Of course, there was also Marjorie Fish's early work on the star map that Betty drew as the result of a post-hypnotic suggestion from Dr. Simon after she had relived a conversation she had with the leader on board the craft where she asked him where he was from, and he produced a three-dimensional map that was very much like a hologram. And there were stars on it. Some of them were as large as nickels. Two were as large as nickels. Some were only pinpoints. The two large ones were connected by five solid lines. Others were connected by two or three solid lines, and then there were others that were connected by dotted or dashed lines. And Betty said it was her understanding that the solid lines represented trade routes or places that they went to on frequently, and that the dotted lines represented expeditions. And Marjorie Fish had read John Fuller's book, The Interrupted Journey, in 1966, Betty's map was in that book. And Marjorie, who was a member of Mensa, a very brilliant woman from Ohio, she was a school teacher. She had studied biology in college, reasoned that perhaps if this place really existed in our galaxy, she could find it. So she started looking for this pattern of stars. She thought initially that she'd find many, but in the end, she found only one, and that was with great difficulty. She met with Betty many times. She talked with Betty in the early years. She met with her in person in 1969 when she visited her at her apartment in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. She over that period of time, between 66 and 72, constructed 26 three-dimensional models of different parts of our galaxy based upon Betty's two-dimensional map. She used monofilament line and beads of different sizes. One had 256 stars in its proper three-dimensional location. The great difficulty she had is those catalogs were not readily available to her. She had to go to the astronomy department at the college, and she had to sit down there and hand copy the data out of the greasy catalogs. They didn't even have a Xerox machine back then to photocopy it. And then she had to take that data home, and she had to do the math to know the proper position in which to put every one of those beads. And you can imagine doing that 26 times.
Unbelievable.
The end, in 1972, a new catalog came out, a new Gleasy catalog, and she was able to complete her work when the last three stars were found. We didn't even know that they existed in 1964 when Betty drew that map. And the interesting thing is that she identified those base stars, the ones in the, at the very front of that map, as Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2, and they are in the constellation Reticulum in our southern hemisphere. And the sun is on the map as well, and very interesting. All of the stars that she had connected on that map were at that time believed to be sun-like stars. And Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 Reticuli were very similar to our sun in their mass, in their diameter, and in their luminosity. And they were estimated to be as much as 3 billion years older than our sun. So if there are planets around those stars that have developed life, then they might have, it might be a civilization old enough to have developed technology that would enable them to travel to Earth.
Yes, yes. I know Zeta Reticuli, always a main suspect, I guess you could say, in the source of these strange objects. So a lot of that, I'm sure, comes from the star map case. You know, the strength of that, so.
Yes.
Tremendous
now, some
stuff.
Of the some of the stars on Marjorie's map have different values today, now that we know that that we have a better estimate of their distances. But Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 Reticuli still look very interesting to me.
Absolutely. Now, we've said here that this coming up is the 50th anniversary of the abduction. I know that they recently erected a historical plaque for Betty and Barney on U.S. Route 3 in North Lincoln. Talk about, I'm sure you played a hand in this, I know, because I've seen it on your website. I guess talk a little bit about the process and, you know, kudos to you, because it's so difficult to get any respect, really, when you're talking about UFOs. It's just difficult. And so to get a historical plaque from the state of New Hampshire is a tremendous achievement. So, I mean, hats off to you for that. Talk a little bit about the process. Sounds like it was a bit arduous at times, but eventually it did work out and you guys got the plaque, right?
Yes, that's correct. New Hampshire man, David Stevens, contacted me several years ago. I think it was 2007 or 2008 with the idea. And he had actually gotten a lot of people to sign a petition for this to happen. But then he had somehow gotten in touch with the Department of Historical Resources for the committee that was in charge of erecting these historical markers. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got involved, because it would have to be me who would knew so much about the case and had all of the materials to back up the statements. So I sent a petition into the state of New Hampshire, and several years passed, and I didn't hear anything. I had sort of given up on it. I thought that perhaps they weren't going to do it. But then this spring, I received a message from the department informing me that they had decided to fund it. So I was very, very happy about this. It took a lot of work, because for a brief paragraph, I had to provide footnotes for every statement, and not just one, multiple footnotes, to prove that what I said was accurate. I had 20 footnotes and 28 references for a short paragraph about the hills. And it just simply says, On the night of September 19 to 20, 1961, Portsmouth, New Hampshire couple Betty and Barney Hill experienced a close encounter with an unidentified flying object and 2 hours of lost time while driving south on Route 3 near Lincoln. They filed an official Air Force Project Blue Book report of a brightly lit cigar-shaped craft the next day, but were not public with their story until it was leaked in the Boston Traveler in 1965. This was the first widely reported UFO abduction report in the United States. So that's what it says. It sits on Route 3 in North Lincoln, right out in front of the Indian Head Resort.
Awesome.
And that is the location where the 50th anniversary celebration is going to take place on September 23rd and 24th.
At the Indian Head Resort in New Hampshire.
Yes, in North Lincoln, New Hampshire.
Excellent, excellent. What do you guys have planned for the big 50th anniversary celebration?
Well, Stanton Friedman is going to meet me there, and on Friday evening we're going to do a lecture on the Betty and Barney Hill case. It's going to be different from the one that I do in Exeter. And then the following day, we're going to give a guided tour of the Close Encounter route. And there's the movie, the original movie, UFO Incident, starring James Earl Jones and Estelle Parsons, is going to be shown. And then there's going to be a book signing and a cocktail party, and Stan and I will do the book signing and be there to have our photographs taken with people and to discuss the case, answer anybody's questions that they might have. And then there is going to be a dinner where they're going to be serving Betty's and Barney's favorite foods.
Interesting. That's cool. I like that. That's a nice touch to the whole event. Was that your idea, or someone else come up with that one?
I guess it was the cook at the restaurant who came up with that idea.
Very good. I like that.
Yes, and I thought it was good.
Yeah.
I just gave them the information about the foods that Betty and Barney liked.
I gotta know now. What is on the menu then? What were their foods?
Well, I'm trying to remember. I had given them several suggestions. I'm not sure exactly what is on the menu, but I do know that Betty loved boiled dinner. That was one of her favorites. Barney was a big beef eater. He loved hamburgers and cheeseburgers, and they loved chocolate cake. That was another thing.
Interesting. So, all right.
I gave them several suggestions, so we'll see what they come up with.
Awesome. Awesome. Is there a website for the celebration for the 50th, for the event there?
Yes. You can go actually to the Exeter UFO Festival site and follow that and click down to go down and click on the Indian Head Resort's URL. Or you can go to my site and you can find it there. That's www.kathleen-marden.com. Or you can go online and go to www.indianheadresort.com. So there are several ways to find it.
Awesome, awesome. And of course, we got to talk about Exeter here because it's coming up in just a few short days by the time people are listening to this. It's actually coming up in a few short days right now because it's only about a week away.
Yes, absolutely.
And I know you've been an integral part of this whole thing, and you know they kind of brought me in on the mix last year, and I love it. I really just love the whole event. I'm actually going up a couple days early just because I love Exeter so much and love the experience. And it'd be nice to get away for a while and enjoy that, you know, that town. It's like a Norman Rockwell painting come to life. It's just unbelievable. So talk a little bit about the big Exeter event, what you're going to be talking about, and the event in general, because you know I've been talking about it for a while. I've done a bunch of appearances and have been trying to get people excited about this event because it's such a fantastic day up there in Exeter. But you know, you're a big part of it as well, so let's hear your take on it.
Oh, it's a great event, a great day. It starts at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's free to the public. Speakers are going to be, in addition to myself, are going to be Stanton Friedman, Rich Dolan, and Steve Fermani. And there is also going to be a movie. It was a documentary made by a couple originally from New Hampshire who now live in California. And the movie has two parts. One is about the Hill abduction, and the other is about the incident at Exeter. Now, my lecture is going to be on, it's called Setting the Record Straight on the Betty and Barney Hill case. So, as I said a little bit earlier, I'm going to be presenting the skeptics' arguments, and then I'm going to be presenting the documented evidence that I have photocopied to set the record straight about what is real, what is the truth, and what is not the truth regarding the Hill abduction.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be outstanding, folks. So come on up and check it out, www.exeterufofestival.com. And Kathy said the magic word right there. It's absolutely free. So if you're in the New England area, or even if you feel like making the drive up to Exeter, you know, just find your way to Exeter and walk right into the town hall, and you can experience the whole event. So that's what I really love about the event, too. You know, it's open for everybody.
There are also children's activities taking place throughout the day in a different location.
Absolutely, yeah,
The conference is at the Exeter Town Hall.
Mm-hmm. And then throughout town, there's all these great children's activities. It's really fun for the whole family, too. That's another thing that's great about it. You hear about a lot of these UFO conferences. They're very stoic. And, of course, you know, the presentations are going to be stoic here and fascinating and in-depth. But there's, you know, you can bring your kids to these and have some fun as well, which is really great because we want to be inclusive and include the whole community in this.
It will be a great day, I think, for anybody who decides to attend.
And they should, for sure. Now, what's going on with you beyond the big 50th anniversary? I know you obviously, as we said at the beginning, you co-authored Capture with Stan Freeman. You also co-authored a follow-up book, or a second book, if you will, Science Was Wrong, that you wrote with Stan as well. What kind of projects do you have in the till right now that we can look forward to from Kathy Martin in the future?
Well, there is a new book just published, UFOs and Aliens. Is There Anybody Out There? And it's an anthology with 12 different authors. I have a chapter in that titled Alien Abduction, Fact or Fiction. And I have just produced a DVD. It's 132 minutes. And it is excerpts from Betty's and Barney's hypnosis tapes. They have been reworked. You won't hear Dr. Simon's voice. You will only hear Betty and Barney describing and reliving the events that they went through on the night of September 19th and into the early morning hours of September 20th, 1961. It is good because under hypnosis, there are many pauses, and it just drags on, and the quality of those initial tapes was not really good. But Bob Terrio does this for a living, and he produced it and edited it, and he did a wonderful job. Their voices are clear. They speak right along. You don't hear those pauses. And it's a DVD, so you get video as well. You have archival photos. You'll see the entire close encounter route and artist renditions of what the UFO looked like. You'll even see it flying. You'll see artist renditions of what happened during the abduction as you hear Betty and Barney describing what happened to them.
Awesome, awesome. Where can folks pick that up? At the website?
It is only available at my website and at Stanton Friedman's website, and I will have it at the Exeter UFO Festival.
Awesome, awesome. I want to try and get my hands on a copy of that. Sounds fantastic. Well,
everyone who has listened to it has been very impressed.
I'm sure, yeah. It sounds amazing. It sounds amazing. I definitely want to check that out. All right, we're going to just do the wrap-up here, and we'll be all set, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you for going the extra half hour. I appreciate it. It's been a crazy interview here. So.
Yes, yes. Well, thank goodness we after we finished talking about those highly controversial topics.
It's weird. It's very weird.
We had a good connection.
Yeah, it's very strange. Well, Kathy, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. What many of the listeners may not realize, although I haven't edited, obviously, the interview yet, but we'll see how it all works out. But we've been plagued by technical difficulties here, especially when we get into some of the more controversial areas of the story. So very strange, one of the strangest interviews I've conducted in a long time here. And I really, really want to thank you for your patience in dealing with all this and for being so candid and forthright and detailed about the Betty and Barney Hill case. I mean, this one is perfect for the BOA Audio Archive for anyone who wants to learn more about this case, because you really provide just a stunning array of details as we follow the chronology of how this story developed. And as I said, you know, you hear that you're the niece of Betty and Barney Hill, but people don't seem to realize, or perhaps they hadn't realized, that you really were there all along the course of this whole thing, with the exception of the very night when it happened. You weren't in the car, but you were about as close as you can get to the Betty and Barney Hill abduction. And I just find your perspective on all this to be absolutely fascinating, and I cannot wait to meet you again in a week at Exeter so I can talk to you without someone cutting out on the conversation every 5 minutes.
Well, thank you for having me on and for persevering through all of those times when we were cut off and you had to call me back. I really appreciate it. It's important that the truth is told.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're doing just tremendous work here, keeping the legacy of Betty and Barney Hill alive. I mean, without you, this story could fall by the wayside, and it hasn't, and it's gotten stronger and stronger over the years and getting the recognition that it deserves, not just in the UFO community, but as we've seen from the historical marker in New Hampshire, from the world at large. And hopefully someday we'll look back on the Betty and Barney Hill case and there won't be that question mark attached to it anymore. We'll know for sure there was something seriously going on there, and it was the start of whatever world we're going to be living in the future. And that, I think, is you know, what we all strive for. So thank you once again for coming on the show, and I will see you in a few short days. Looking forward to catching up again in Exeter.
And I'm looking forward to it, too. Good night.
That does it for this installment of BOA Audio Season 6. Big, big thanks, of course, to our guest, Kathleen Marden. Be sure to check out our website, www.kathleen-marden.com. Don't forget the hyphen, my friends, and also be sure to check out her books, co-authored with Stanton Friedman, Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, and Science Was Wrong. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio listener feedback, and even though we're trying to rush the episode out to you, I feel like I owe you some BOA Audio listener feedback, so let's dig on in to the mailbag and answer some listener emails. The first one comes from Mark O'Day in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and here's what he has to say. I enjoy your program very much, and I notice that you are featuring musical acts on your show from time to time. Are you still accepting submissions? If so, could you provide me with information regarding said submission? Thank you, and keep up the awesome work. Mark O'Day, from the Galactic Cowboy Orchestra in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Thank you for writing in, Mark. Absolutely, we are still accepting music submissions from the BOA Audio listeners. I kind of have pulled back on the plugs at the beginning of the show requesting music, because quite simply, I am just overwhelmed with submissions from the BOA Audio listeners. I barely have time to produce the program as it is right now, and to wade through all these outstanding musical submissions is certainly a lot of work that I have kept on the back burner. But how can you turn down a guy who is billed as part of the Galactic Cowboy Orchestra? I'm dying to hear what these guys have up their sleeves. So definitely shoot me your stuff, Mark. I would be happy to give it a listen. And that goes for all of the awesome BOA Audio listeners who have the musical talents and want to submit some music for the show. Don't be dismayed if you've sent something in and you haven't heard it yet on the program. It's all in a big folder on my hard drive, and it is in the till for future editions of BOA Audio. The next email comes from Sandra, no hometown listed, and here's what she has to say. Sorry, Tim. I listen to Banal every time you have a new show, even the baseball one, though I have no interest in sports. However, I had to turn off this week after about 20 minutes of listening to Marie and Larry bash the ghost shows and puffing themselves up for their wonderful research. Get real, folks. The shows are entertainment, not science, and my mother taught me not to toot my own horn too loudly, lest I appear conceited. Sandra, no hometown listed. First of all, thank you so much for writing in, Sandra. I wanted to feature your email here on the program as an example that we don't just read emails from the folks who are sending us glowing reviews. I hear your complaint, and I was thinking of your complaint as I was editing the episode before we put it out last week. So I completely hear what you're saying, Sandra, you know, and in a lot of ways that was part of the realness of the episode. I'm not going to speak for Marie and Larry. All I'm going to say is, you know, that's just the way they feel, and they're not apologetic about that. That's the way they feel, and that's their real feelings. And maybe on some other shows, they would rein it in, or they would try to be a little more paranormally politically correct. But here on BOA Audio, they feel comfortable to speak their mind, as do I when I speak to them on the show. I'm apologetic if it ruffled your feathers, but that's just the way we all felt. And I want to give folks out there an opportunity to hear a very real conversation with these two fantastic researchers. With regards to the ghost shows being only entertainment, I absolutely agree with you, Sandra. There is no dispute about that. And I think that really is part of what the big bone of contention is, not just with Marie and Larry and myself, but a lot of people in the paranormal community. We put a lot of work into this. We put a lot of thought into this. And to see some of these programs really that, in my honest opinion, are as fake as anything you're going to see on the WWE. And that's what upsets me, really, is that you're not getting the honest truth from these programs, and it paints the entire paranormal community in a false light. But that's really a whole nother kettle of fish, so we'll just leave it at that. I really appreciate that you wrote in, Sandra, and believe me, I hear your criticism loud and clear. Final email comes from Brett in Massachusetts. Here's what he has to say. I'm going out to Exeter next weekend, hopefully bringing some friends, too, who may have a vague interest in this stuff. Was wondering if there's any Friday night pregame going on, as it would be nice to meet people in a more casual, i.e. drunk, setting. Let me know. I'm looking forward to this. Brett in Massachusetts. You knew I wasn't going to let BOA Audio listener feedback go here in this episode without throwing in one more Exeter UFO Festival plug. I'm shameless, folks. I really am shameless when it comes to this event. But you know something? I don't feel too bad about plugging the shit out of this show because it's absolutely free. If I was trying to push tickets on people, I'd feel pretty bad about the whole thing. I really would be embarrassed by how much I am pushing the Exeter UFO Festival. But in my heart of hearts, I know that we're putting on an outstanding program here for folks in Exeter, New Hampshire, Saturday, September 3rd, and we're putting on the show absolutely free for anybody that can find their way to Exeter. Attendance at this festival will not cost you a thing, and that's something that the vast majority of UFO events quite simply cannot boast. That's why we're plugging the shit out of it here on BOA Audio, not just because I'm the MC, but because this is a fantastic opportunity for anybody in the New England area to see some top-notch UFO researchers and not bust their wallets to do so. With regards to Friday night pregame for the Exeter UFO Festival, it is in the works. Anyone who listens to our sister program, The Good Parade, knows that we have been talking about this for quite some time, and we have a lot of listeners, not just Good Parade listeners, but BOA Audio listeners, making the trip up to Exeter. Stay tuned to the BOA forum, theusofe.com, as well as my Facebook page, facebook.com/BINNALL. I am literally going to be in Exeter in the next 24 hours to kick off the start of what is kind of a staycation of sorts for me, where I'll be spending Wednesday and Thursday and obviously Friday and Saturday as well as Sunday up in Exeter. So I'll be scouting out some locations for a BOA Audio / Good Parade get together on Friday night. As I said, stay tuned to the BOA outlets for more information on where all that is going down. It will most likely be kind of impromptu, but I'm going to try and get folks at least 24 hours notice on where
things will be happening. And once again, let's plug the website, www.ExeterUFOFestival.com. Pretty simple, all one word, ExeterUFOFestival.com. Check it out. Now, this mention of the Good Parade actually reminds me that I want to talk a little bit about the technical difficulties that happened during the interview you just heard. I completely forgot about that until now. And the reason why the Good Parade mention jogged my memory is because literally the day after we taped this Kathleen Martin interview for the program, we taped the latest edition of the Good Parade using the exact same setup that we used for the Kathleen Martin interview, which we also use for all BOA Audio and TGP episodes. That show ran an hour and 45 minutes and included zero technical difficulties, much like I'd say 90% of the BOA Audio episodes we've taped this season, which is part of why I wanted to include these weird issues in the show. Having gone over the episode, having edited it from beginning to end, what I'm struck by really is that the technical difficulties only occurred during two questions during the interview. The first question being abductees used as specimens by the abduction research community, and the second during Kathleen's discussion on the weird things that happened to Betty Hill after Barney Hill passed away. Now, obviously, we're never going to really know what happened. Occam's Razor tells us that there was just simply phone line issues, problems during the taping of the episode. These things happen. As I said, though, very, very rarely here over the last year or so on the program. But I'm fully willing to concede that it is very, very likely that that was merely it. A very innocent, benign explanation for what happened during that conversation. Now, let's put on our tinfoil hats here and just speculate on what else that could have been. You have to first, of course, look at the idea of this whole government intervention. But I find that to be, quite frankly, lacking, because we're talking about the 50th anniversary here of the Betty and Barney Hill case. There's just no reason why the government would want to tinker with an interview between Kathleen Martin and myself here 50 years after the whole thing went down, no matter how controversial or strange the questions were. Some folks out there, I'm sure, are saying it was totally the government. The government did it. Hey, more power to you guys. If that's what you believe, go for it. I'm skeptical of that. If I was really going to get esoteric about this, I would say that it has something to do with the trauma involved surrounding Barney's experience dealing with these abduction and UFO researchers. As Kathleen said when she answered the question, having to play those tapes for the researchers was tremendously traumatic for Barney Hill. Additionally, I have a feeling, and I'm almost willing to bet, that all of these weird events that happened to Betty Hill after Barney's death were also extremely traumatic. Where do you go from there? I don't know. Could it have been some kind of spiritual intervention? Anything's possible here on BOA Audio. Some kind of psychic interference, if you will. Kathleen certainly understood how traumatic these events were for them, and maybe it's just something that she has no control over, and it just happened as she was thinking about how difficult it was for her uncle and aunt to go through these experiences. I've talked to many, many people who listen to the program, and they're always saying, Tim, why don't you just tell us what you think about things? And really, the reason that is because I keep the book open at all times. I keep the possibilities endless here on the program. And I wanted to kind of spell out where my thinking has been going with regards to all this. As I said, Occam's Razor tells us that it was very likely phone issues. But beyond that, there's a whole myriad of possibilities for why this went down. And here at the end of the show, I just wanted to kind of spell out a few for the folks out there listening and give you guys a little food for thought. The reason I didn't want to go over all this at the beginning of the program is because I wanted people to give it some thought on their own and then listen to what I had to say about it. And then, you know, maybe we can all talk about it a little bit in future installments of BOA Audio Listener Feedback. I definitely would love to hear your theories on why we had these weird technical problems during the episode. Because, as I said, this is definitely something that was not common here on the program over the last few months, if not year or so. We've certainly had some episodes that had technical issues, but I always could figure out almost immediately what the problem was. This time around, it was completely bizarre and flummoxing for me, and I've produced close to 200 episodes of this program, so it was certainly one for the mystery books, if you will. That's my ramble here for the end of the show. Send me your thoughts, send me your critiques, send me your correspondences, send me your theories on the program. I would love to hear them. And here are the means to get in touch with me, not just to shoot me a line, but also to participate in BOA Audio Listener Feedback. You can write to boaaudio@hotmail.com or go to binallofamerica.com, binallofamerica.com, and click the contact button. And the final method, of course, is to join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. And if you're part of Facebook or Twitter, you can find me on those sites as well. Just punch in Binall, B-I-N-N-A-L-L, and I'll pop up on the search engine right away. Feel free to befriend me, follow me, or poke me. It's all good, and we'd love to have you as part of our online circle of friends. Up next, please allow me to thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Rochelle Hawks, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, our contributing cartoonist, Andy Carolan, and our webmaster, Jeremy Boston. This episode is coming out at you very quickly since the last episode, and I do not believe that we have posted any new material from the BOA staff, but I've got a ton of stuff in the till that is waiting to be posted while I'm in Exeter or right after I return around Labor Day. So stay tuned to Binall of America for a whole bunch of great stuff from the BOA staff. We say it every week here on the program, and it is the truth, my friends. If you're only listening to BOA audio, and you're not reading the columns at Binall of America, then you're only getting half the story. BOA, make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. Now, traditionally, this is the part of the program where I take off my cap and pass it around to the BOA audio listeners and ask for your help by making a donation to the program. But I've been watching the Red Sox here tonight, and it's part of the annual Jimmy Fund telethon to raise money for cancer research, and I just feel kind of strange about asking people to make donations to Binall of America this week. So we're going to do a little bit something different and ask you to make a donation to a charity that needs your help. It could be the Red Cross and helping out the folks who have been victims of Hurricane Irene. It could be the Dana-Farber Cancer Research Institute. It could be the Elizabeth Glazer Pediatric AIDS Foundation. It doesn't matter to me, but if you make a donation to an organization that needs your help, I'm sure that it would be greatly appreciated by those folks out there. I know a lot of people in the paranormal community come at you with sob stories about why they need your donations, but there are people out there in the real world with real problems who are suffering in a very big way, and they need our help in a much, much grander fashion. So if you can make a donation to those folks, that would be appreciated by myself and whatever organization you're making a donation to. I can always come back next week and ask for donations to the show, and I probably will. But this week, let's do something different. Let's do something special and make a donation to an organization that needs your help. Next week on the program, I can't say for sure when this one's going to be posted. I'm going to be burned out following the Exeter Festival. I'm going to try and get it out to you towards the end of next week. And our guest on the program will be Butch Witkowski, talking about his research into the very controversial and strange human mutilation phenomenon. Butch has put forward a theory, essentially, that not only are cattle being mutilated, by some nefarious, possibly interstellar forces, but also human beings are as well, and he's going to present his research for the BOA Audio listeners right here on the program next week. And I would be remiss if I did not mention that Butch will also be addressing some of the controversy that has swirled around him over the last few months. If you're not familiar with this, I don't want to give it too much press, but let's just say that Butch has been facing Imbrogno-esque accusations from various parties in the world of esoterica, and the rumor was for quite a while that he went underground, that he disappeared. Well, he's coming up above the surface on BOA Audio, not only to talk about his human mutilation research, but to answer these accusations. That'll be next time on BOA Audio. As I said, we're going to try and get it out to you towards the end of next week, but please don't hold me to that. And on that note, we close the book on another edition of BOA Audio. Big, big thanks, of course, to Kathleen Martin for coming on the show. Thanks to Mark, Sandra, and Brett for writing in on BOA Audio listener feedback. And enormous thanks to all you folks out there, the hardcore BOA Audio listeners, the folks who tune in all the way to the end of the program to listen to my ramblings. You guys are the best. You are the fuel that drives the BOA machine. I've been teasing it here at the end of the show for quite a while. We've got big, big plans for the BOA franchise in 2012 and beyond. And all that is thanks to the BOA Audio listeners and the BOA readers and supporters. Thank you for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, or I see you in Exeter, this is Tim Benall, thanking you for listening and signing off.